Welcome to the Andy Social Podcast. My name is Andy and far out. I'm so distracted. My phone's going off. Hi, hun. Do you want fish or pasta for dinner tonight? Thanks, Jess. I might pick fish, but I'll reply later. So much for a slick and well-rehearsed intro for this podcast. Anyway, hello. Welcome. If you're listening to this podcast for the first time, I hope you enjoy this episode and go back and listen to some of the previous guests that I've had on. And a big thank you, as always, to everybody that's been listening week in and week out of this podcast. Is that the right term, week in and week out? I guess so. Anyway, this week's guest, I'm doing well, is Dave Langlands. Now, Dave is the bass player for Melbourne band The Eternal. And for anybody that's been listening to this podcast for a while now, will recall, I believe it's episode 14 or 16. No, it's episode 14. That's with Mark Kelson, who's the frontman of The Eternal. So it's cool to have another member of the band on the podcast. So in addition to being the bass player for The Eternal, Dave is also the venue and general manager of the Terminus Hotel in Fitzroy and also Foresters in Collingwood. So a few weeks ago, Dave was very kind and generous with his time and allowed me to sneak into Foresters before opening when I was in Melbourne a few weeks back. And we got chatting over beers. Dave has been heavy into the craft beer world for quite a number of years. He's involved in Moondog Craft Brewing, does a lot of exporting. He runs both of these pubs. He goes to a lot of expos and he knows anything and everything about craft beer. So the majority of this episode, we talk about craft beer. We do talk about The Eternal a little bit, but a lot of this is beer loving fun. Now, even if you don't love beer, you know, a big beer drinking fan, you should still get something out of this episode. It's a really, really good chat and great to get some perspective of somebody that works in a different industry. It's really, really cool. And I hope that you enjoy it. Everything that we speak about is going to be in the show notes over at andysocial.net. So make sure you go there. As with all of my previous episodes, so anything that you're curious in checking out further or you want to reach out to Dave or any of the previous guests, you can just go to andysocial.net and everything will be in that one spot for you. So with all of that dribble being dribbled out of my gob, enjoy this episode with Dave. Thank you. By the way, what are we drinking?
This beer that we're drinking is...
The reason
I poured it, I'm fucking stoked we've got it on tap. It's from a brewery called Garage Project. It's a Kolsch, which is a German style beer. But the way that they did this was they're experimenting with all sorts of different things, and they're experimenting with music and its effect on fermentation. So they submerged a speaker in the fermentation vessel. And played it 2 weeks worth of classical music that they had some classical music professor put together for them. And it was like when the fermentation started, it was like a romantic kind of music. And then it got a bit, when the fermentation started to ramp up, it got a bit like kind of more, fast and interesting, and then kind of a nice, docile music at the end. So they actually also did this similar beer, a dark beer called Dark Resonance, where they played it doom metal for 2 weeks. It's so cool.
Surely some old school The Eternal be passed.
Maybe. Apparently the guy that put the doom metal playlist together for the fermentation was some like crazy doom nut, and it was chronological without repeats of pretty much all of his favorite doom bands. And like, it's a 2 week playlist. So
wow.
I own that much music or even know that much music, but
let alone doom metal. Wow.
But yeah, so apparently cool.
It tastes cool. It tastes nice.
It's pretty simple beer. Apparently it was like 14% better attenuation fermentation than a standard ferment by playing it music.
What a different concept. I mean, even if it was just marketing alone, that's cool. Like, people will drink the beer because of the story behind it. That's sorry, are they Australian?
From Wellington.
Wellington, okay, yeah, so yeah, Kiwi.
There's a few more out there, breweries and working in Australia at the moment. The guys that I do some work for, Moondog, they do pretty crazy stuff. They do put all sorts of different ingredients in beers and different flavors and experiment with lots of different stuff. But Garage Project are one of these breweries that are just next level. They're just crazy.
I love that. I love it. It's sort of like the equivalent of women that are pregnant and they put the headphones on their belly and play music for the child in the womb to try and give it early development.
Yeah.
But I understand the logic behind it. And I guess when it comes to music and you got like, I don't know, this is where I've got no idea what I'm talking about, but like sound waves and different things that are created, rhythm and whatnot. I mean, it's all sort of chemistry in a way. Everything sort of mixes in together. So as crazy as it sounds, I mean, maybe there's some science behind it that...
Look, I'm sure there is. I mean, yeast is just it's a living organism. It has, you know, it eats, it poops, essentially. It poops alcohol, which is just awesome.
I was about to say, I wish I pooped alcohol, but that actually probably be a really horrible thing if I did that.
Yeah. It would be fucked up.
My life would be over.
Yeah.
That's it. I wouldn't even leave the house.
But yeah, look, I don't know. There's certainly no shortage of alcohol in my life, but, you know, if you can, you know, make something of it and not let it.
Well, you've made a business out of it. I mean, you've made employment and a livelihood out of it. So you're obviously on the right track.
Yeah, it's an interesting industry to be in, and it's an interesting place to be in, especially like where my life is now. So essentially, I'm running two pubs that are, you know, real instrumental in craft beer. We do a lot of events, a lot of collaborations, all that sort of thing. And randomly, you know, started working doing beer exporting a couple of years ago, just kind of out of a chance meeting in Japan with some guys that I'd met through a beer event, and then ended up somehow just falling into this weird world of selling beer to the rest of the world. It's weird.
Okay, so on that part of it, what's involved in exporting beer? Because I can only assume, like, whenever I think about alcohol and business, I think of licensing, I think of all sorts of expenses and fees just to practice the point of selling alcohol. But to export it overseas, what sort of stuff do you have to go through? What does it even look like? You can go into as much detail as you want.
It's from an outsider's perspective, it is confusing, and it's really like, how does that even happen? When I first started doing it, I literally knew nothing about it. And when I was first approached to do it, I was just like, I don't know how to do that. I don't. But, you know, I have a kind of firm belief in saying yes as much as possible.
Nice.
Which is sometimes gets me into some pretty heavy workloads, but it also, you know, allows me to do this crazy stuff. But exporting, you know, essentially, you know, I look after one brand at the moment. I used to look after a couple of different brands, but I will go into a market, do my research on what the market's like, what kind of, you know, kind of who the players are in the market and that sort of thing, and then decide kind of which way to approach them, and then try to find people who will buy the beer. And if they buy the beer, then we go and do market visits. So we go. So I just got back from a festival in Beijing that we went to for a week, which was an absolute trip. It was really, really cool.
I can't even imagine. Like, I still haven't been to China. I'd love to go. I think just going there in general is such a massive shock to the system. But to go there with the expectation of trying to sell beer, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, beer people are pretty relaxed. It's not like really high business stuff. It's not like even it's not even like going to sell wine or going to sell I don't know tractors or going to sell whatever the fuck you would normally be doing and that sort of thing. It's you've always got a beer in your hand.
Yeah.
which really just
that's networking.
It really helps stuff stuff move along. So you know it's always really fun. The people are generally all really kind of relaxed and like most people that I know in the beer industry from like really varied backgrounds and varied stories of how they ended up getting there. Because no one, you know, when they're a kid goes, oh, I want to work in the beer industry.
And if you do, then I assume it's slightly frowned upon. By anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
But yeah, sure you do, kid.
Yeah, I know, Also, yeah, you just want to get free booze or be a professional beer taster or whatever, which those jobs actually exist, which is just crazy.
Oh, I don't think I've got the discipline to do that.
No.
It'd be like wine tasting, I assume, where you sort of... Well, I don't know about the spitting out.
You don't spit it.
No?
Yeah.
Okay, right.
We had the AIBAs, the Australian International Beer Awards, were just on over Good Beer Week, which was last week. We had all the judges in here. It was the week before when they were judging all the beers. And, yeah, they can't spit it out, so they get pissed. I mean, they're only drinking very small amounts and they're trying to, like, you know, assess the beer as...
It's really hard as much as possible. Especially after a few beers, like, you just lose... I'm assuming you'd lose your perspective as to... To start separating, especially micro... differences in taste and texture and aftertaste.
Well, they're tasting, you know, if, say the pale ale category is like 200 entrants in the pale ale category. I don't think they don't all taste everything.
Mm.
I think it's just score based and then they average out the scores. I'm not entirely sure. I'm just making that up.
Sounds good though.
Yeah. Sounds like, but look, I know a few people that do the judging and the stewarding and all that kind of stuff for the awards. So I have a fair idea about how it works, but I've never actually been there for the tasting or for the judging or anything like that.
It's interesting though. Like, you know, traditionally all the stereotype of the wine tasting is that they would spit it out afterwards and then just go through and they're looking for the initial taste. But for beer, like, you've got to consume it because that's part of the whole...
Yeah, and also there's so much of your taste of beer and it's all tied into, you know, the back of the mouth and the throat and that sort of thing that really dictates how it tastes and that sort of thing. Man, I talk about beer too much.
It's good though. I mean,
it's crazy.
It's cool that you... I mean, you got a love for it. And a lot of people, love beer. I'm fucking one of them. But you've been able to turn it into something that makes viable sense from a financial point of view to have your livelihood. You've made it into a job. So your role or job where it comes to here and the other pub is?
It's the Terminus. Fitzroy North.
What? Your sort of like the bar manager or what's the
general manager of general both manager? I was at the Terminus for about 5 years. I used to work for a big corporate pub company that were, you know, 100% kind of mainstream beers, and then happened to start working in the James Squire Brewhouse, which was, I think, you certainly went there when I was working there, and they had a brewery in sight, and, you know, really got into beer and stuff like that, and then approached the Terminus, who were at the time expanding and building a whole extra thing on. So I've been there, I helped, you know, with that expansion, and then ended up being venue manager there for a couple of years, and now general manager of this place, Foresters, and the Terminus. And I guess it's like my role is just managing people and building teams and, you know, coming up with events and I don't know. We've done, like, as an example, good beer week just happened, and the range of things that we did throughout the pubs, we did everything from we did collaboration beers with local breweries. We actually did a collaboration hot sauce at Terminus between it was a whiskey distiller, a hot sauce company, and Terminus all got together and came up with this whiskey barbecue hot sauce, which is delicious. I'll give you a bottle, actually. I've got some behind the bar.
Drooling at the thought.
To, like, the Garage Project guys, for instance, we did a Garage Project lab, which was essentially like a science fair with beer.
Wow.
So we had a guy with liquid nitrogen making sorbet out of this sour beer and adding all these different flavors and stuff to it. We had, like, they have this beer called Two Poor Flat White, which is a shot of really strong coffee stout, and then this really creamy, almost like it's a nitrogenated, so it's like a Guinness, you know, that really creamy, smooth head. So using that as the milk and creating, like, a beer flat white. Garage Project again, just,
I tell you, crazy. What, like, I could see my morning to evening day, my daily routine. You could easily substitute beer into every part of my day, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and everything in between. There's a way to blend it in.
It's pretty, it's pretty diverse as a drink. It's funny, I actually end up just drinking gin and tonics at the end of a shift most of the time, which is a really refreshing drink.
Oh, my wife, she'll love to hear that, because she's just an advocate for gin and tonics. She just loves it. She's not a big beer drinker these days, but she'll get on the gins. She loves it. Loves it. Refreshing.
And, you know, like, beer is, you know, it's what I do every day, all day. So
you got to balance it out somehow.
I really don't. I actually don't drink that much. like, really, I wouldn't be able to get anything done if I did. You know,
considering you're around it so much, because if you think about when going back to, like, if you were a kid and you said, I want to work, you know, in the craft beer industry, or want to export beer or something to do with beer. And then it's like, okay, well, you just want to be able to drink beer. And so if you think about, okay, well, the best job ever would be to work in a brewery or whatever, because I can drink heaps of beer. No, it's
brewing is a terrible, all the brewers that know me, brewing is like cleaning 95% of the time. It's just cleaning big stainless steel tanks.
Well, there's a beer company out in Perth called Nail.
Yep, I know Nail.
And I spoke with John, who's the owner of Nail.
I know John, yep.
And we checked out their warehouse, and they share it with Feral.
Yep.
And walked in, and he just said straight away, he says, I'm so sorry. He says, it smells like shit in here. And there was this really, really strong stench of, well, the memories that came back into my head was the waking up on a fold-out futon mattress at some share house in Newtown in Sydney, with, like, spilt beer all over my legs and on the ground and on the mattress, and that really stale,
I know the smell,
yeasty beer smell.
And smells like that here on a Sunday morning.
Oh, I can only imagine. Yeah. But that's where it takes the glamour out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But for him, like, I mean, and I was really impressed with their setup. Like,
yeah. Really, oh, they do great good beer. He was in Beijing at the festival.
Yeah, right.
We're at, yeah, as well. Cool. They make great beer. So do Feral. Feral do
Feral's amazing, pretty good as well.
Amazing stuff. And are just a good people.
Yeah.
And I think, like going back to, you know, like the beer industry or any industry really, but this industry in particular, it's actually not about the beer.
Mm.
Like, I mean, it is, but I mean, at the end of the day, beer is just a carbonated alcoholic beverage. You can say how life-changing a beer is, or you can play fucking doom metal to it, or you can do, you know, any of the crazy things and make a big deal out of it. But it's just a carbonated beverage. It's the people in the industry that make it so appealing to work in and to be a part of and to be a punter and that sort of thing.
Do you think with craft beer these days, and that's why part of the reason why craft beer is so popular is that it's so personalized. So every craft beer brand has got this unique story behind
it.
There's a picture that's been painted, so people will rock up to a bar, they look at all the symbols on the taps and everything, and they'll gravitate towards a beer because they identify with it because of the story behind the beer itself. So for me, like, I met with John from Nail and went to the warehouse, and he gave me, you know, we had a beer, and then he gave me some extras when I left, and he told me about his story, and they put on the website and all this background. But then suddenly I became like, for me, I felt like a team player behind Nail, and I'm like, man, you got to get Nail to the East Coast. I know it's in little pockets of places.
We've had it here a few times. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I'll push hard, you know, I'll do whatever I can to help. And you become, it's almost like a sporting team.
Yeah.
You become a sporting team, and you can identify with it. You link in with it and you run with it. And it's so cool. And I think craft beer, and that's probably why it's so popular these days. It's not so much about literally the microscopic taste differences and the blends and how it hits the back of your throat, like these professional beer tasters would rate it. It's more about the experience that's behind it and the story and the philosophy and everything.
Yeah, I think it's probably part of a wider trend in just the way that people are doing things these days, where people, you know, we've been fed, I mean, capitalism is this mass-produced culture, and people are so disillusioned with the way they're being marketed to, and really turning off from that sort of thing. And people want to, you know, connect to something. It's happening in wine. It's happening in food. People want to be able to tell a story. People want to have a connection to it or whatever.
One-on-one marketing.
And
especially now, like, you've got, whether it be food, drink or clothing or music or whatever it might be, you've got to try and find some sort of identity behind it, because it's so flooded. Every product and service is flooded. There's so many different things out there. So if you're a beer brand, you got to compete with thousands of other beer brands out there, and you got to try and push your way out of the pack. And without that identity and that story behind it, then you just become part of the rest of the thing. And years ago, you had your Tui's, you had your Carlton, you had all those, and that's all it was. They had the monopoly, and you didn't have things like social media and this quick connection with people, quick communication. Now it's like anyone and everyone can connect.
Yeah.
So you got to up the ante. It's like, it's crazy, like, what you have to do now to stay ahead of the pack.
Yeah. I mean, I think with beer, especially craft beer, breweries are much less competing with each other.
Mm.
They're more competing with the big guys.
Yep.
Because the big guys' market is shrinking every day, and the little guys' market is growing every day. So there's more and more space for everyone. Although there are a lot of young, inexperienced brewers and breweries starting up now that I just look at them and go, shit, how are you going to survive?
Well, as in, like, good intentions, but not thinking.
Well, it's still a business. Yeah. I mean, like, it's this romantic idea that, you know, I want to be a brewer. It's going to be this amazing life. But the reality of marketing, the resources needed to do it, the quality control, and the realities of actually getting the beer into people's hands, you really do need to know to a certain extent what you're doing, or at least have people around you that know.
Yeah.
I mean, it actually doesn't matter how good your beer is.
Product placement.
Just everything. It's insane. I know some, really, really great breweries that I don't see ever getting past the level that they're at the moment and never really growing. And then I know some other ones that are huge and,
nothing special.
Yeah, they're fine.
Yeah, they're okay. They're good, but they're not amazing.
But what they've done right is they've marketed right. They've told the story right. They've connected with they've connected with something in people. There's a local example, Thunder Road, for instance.
Yep.
Nothing about their beer is really clean and well made and perfect, but nothing about them, the people, or anything about them is necessarily that likable or good, but they're fucking everywhere. It's crazy. Because they have a really professional operation as far as the way that they get stuff out there and stuff. But they're probably not up with my favorites in the industry, but
they've got a good team around them to ensure visibility, and they're
professional.
Yeah, professional. Which is, that's probably why, if you look at the mainstream beer brands, Tui's, Carlton, I don't know, whatever else, who's still around these days? Castlemaine, like 4X, are they still owned by?
You've got two main players.
Yep.
CUB, which is Carlton United, who is owned by ABM Bev, which is an American company, who own, so that's Anheuser-Busch. They own pretty much half of the beer in the world.
It's incredible.
And then you've got Lion Nathan, who's a New Zealand company owned by Kirin in Japan.
They've got Tiger as well.
Man, they've got so many brands. Yeah, so I have no idea. Yeah. They own James Squire, Little Creatures. Right. They also own a couple of really great craft breweries.
Little Creatures as well.
Yeah. They've just bought Panhead in New Zealand. I think they have a part ownership of Tuatara. They're always looking.
Wow.
And then there's a few small ones like Coca-Cola and Asahi. Asahi owned Mountain Goat just up the road there.
Really?
Fuck. And, they're the big guys. Although the Mountain Goat guys, even though they're owned by Asahi now, are still absolutely killing it and are just the best people.
Yeah.
Great brewers. Awesome company. Just really, they're still very much within the fold of...
Well... On the topic of big boys buying out smaller breweries over time, see whether you can confirm or dispel the myth. So when it comes to James Squire, and you can answer this any way you want, did the taste change when they were acquired by a larger brewery?
I think they were. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure they were started by Lion Nathan.
I don't think they were ever
a small brewery.
Because I thought they got acquired by somebody halfway through, but after a certain period of time, they got acquired by somebody large. I have no idea how the structure worked, but I just remember, and this might be a mental thing, but I remember somebody working, because this is the Tui's guys who were doing, they were brewing that stuff. And I remember there's a guy in Sydney that works for Tui's, and he's like, I just started brewing Squire, I'm brewing gold now, and you know me.
Yeah, I know you and gold now.
Gold. I've got a relationship with gold now. And then I think maybe it was more of a mental thing rather than anything else, but I'm like, hang on, Tui's, the Tui's guys or whatever are helping with the brewing of James Squire, what the fuck? And then suddenly it didn't taste the same after that. But I don't know.
Yeah, look, there's a constant debate on, Facebook beer groups and threads and all that kind of shit, that as soon as, you know, a brewery sells, or as soon as a brewery scales up to a point where they are being, you know, contracted out to massive scale breweries and that kind of stuff, that everything changes and it's all fucked. The answer is yes and no.
Yeah, okay.
It depends completely on, I mean, like I said with Mountain Goat, I don't think that their quality is dipped at all. If anything, their consistency's gone up. They're in more places. I can get their beer in more places, which is great. The seasonal specialty one-off beers and stuff that they're creating are the best they've ever created. Cool. You know, they just won best for one of their IPAs, just won best IPA at the AIBAs, the trophy, and they also won the Pale Ale trophy as well. I'm pretty sure they got that. They're absolutely killing it. But it has happened, and I've seen it happen to other breweries that get picked up, and yeah, everything turns to shit. Matilda Bay, who make Fat Yak, they used to be independent. They got bought up by CUB, and I mean, Matilda Bay brand and Fat Yak and all of that is just, I don't even know what to say about it. I don't like to shit on any.
No, well, they got quite a few beers under their belt. I mean, as far as different products go, and I mean, I was at the Virgin Lounge last night, and the beers they got on selection, they must have some affiliation with them, and so they got Fat Yak, Lazy Yak, and Minimum Chips. Oh, and then they got Wild Yak as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're okay. Like,
they're fine.
But I do remember, eight odd years ago, drinking a pint of Fat Yak for the first time in Brisbane before a show. And I remember just being absolutely knocked off my socks with how strong that taste was, and then the aftertaste.
Yep. It used to be really bold.
Yeah, really bold. And then now drinking it and not having that same feeling. And then I always put it down to, oh, well, my taste buds are getting used to it. But maybe there's more to it. Maybe it's just a different brewing method after they've sort of scaled up. And
well, that's probably part of it, is that your taste buds have changed.
Yep.
Beer to me is, it's like a moment in time, and it's a, you know, time and a place. It's the way a beer tastes to me today, for instance, versus how it tasted to me last night when I had a couple too many. It's different because, you know, obviously it's the day after and beer tastes different. You know, beer on
so many different factors. That,
you know, I had this, there's a local brewery, Boat Rocker, who just produce amazing beer. I had one of their beers on it was a orange Berliner Weiss, so sour beer.
Yeah.
Really refreshing and light and delicious. I had one in my backyard on a hot day and was just sitting there thinking, this is the best beer I've ever had. And then I had it a couple of weeks later at night time in a bar, and I was just like,
not meh.
I mean, I was like, it's still really good, but like, it just didn't have that impact.
Yeah.
And that could be, you know, the experience that you've had with Fat Yak. I mean, I think that their quality is not necessarily quality is dipped, but their flavor's certainly dipped in the 8 years I think Fat Yak's been around about 8 years.
Roughly. I mean, I don't know the exact year when I first remember drinking. I just remember the bar that I was at in Brisbane at the time, and just going, what the fuck, like, what a stupid name for a beer. Yeah, I'll get that. And then I got it and just went, oh geez, like, this is knocked my taste buds off. But yeah, it was, and going back to what you said about, it's not so much about the beer, it's the experience, it's, you know, where you were at that point in time. And I can remember where I was and what I was doing at that point in time. And it's about making that experience. And then I'm sort of looking around here, and you got this like old school place. It's been around for God knows how long.
150 years.
Yeah.
1868 was built.
You got this like podium up the top there, like this bloody gold clamshell roof.
It's a spectacle.
Yeah, but it's cool, and that would add to the drinking experience.
Adds,
you get a beer, yeah. And you hear with people, and the vibe and whatnot, yeah, adds to how the beer tastes.
Yeah.
And as you said, being in the backyard on a hot day drinking a particular type of beer is going to give you a different experience to you drinking that beer at night when the weather's different. Yeah. So it's all time and place and whatnot. So it's about creating the right thing at the right time. That's why, like, you go to restaurants now, and some restaurants have got their menu list, and then they link them up with beers. I think the guys at Jane Squire were doing that for a bit. They link a beer in with a particular type of food.
Yeah, it's a good thing to do.
Yeah,
I mean, beer is infinitely better with food than wine is. And there's probably a whole bunch of sommeliers and wine people going, bullshit. But you know, the diversity of flavor you can get from beer and how it actually pairs with different types of foods. You know, you've got sweetness, sourness, bitterness, dryness. There's floral flavors. There's, fruity flavors. There's spicy. There's all sorts of stuff that you don't get from something like wine. We do a bit of that here. We've done a few at the Terminus, especially done quite a few beer and food matching dinners and that sort of thing.
How many beers do you have on tap
here?
Yeah,
24.
And do you rotate them fairly regularly?
About half of them we do.
Yep. Okay.
Last week for Good Beer Week, we were New Zealand Pint of Origin, which meant that we just did New Zealand beers for the entire week. We rotated through 80 different beers in a week, which was fucking hard work.
Yeah, I bet. Absolutely.
But it was awesome, like, because we have beers like the one we're drinking, the Resonance, and that Dark Resonance, we had that on tap, the Doom Metal beer, which I was just stoked about.
That's cool.
And lots of really crazy, you know, fruit beers and stuff. And we imported some beers, especially from New Zealand for it. But yeah, it's a lot of work sometimes, but it's the thing that keeps people coming back and keeps people excited about what we're doing, I guess.
It's a different mentality these days. Like, if you think about your traditional pub and going back maybe 10 years, 15 years or so, and you expect the big names, you know, Draft, yep, New, VB, 4X, whatever it might be. And, you know, and I guess that's that old school mentality, like, I know what I like and I know I can get it, and it's that reliability, and they're still around. But I think having this sort of concept, and there's more bars than ever and pubs that have that now, that you can rock up and you can look at the taps and go, fuck, what haven't I had yet? I'm going to have that. And I reckon that's awesome.
We still have Carlton on tap at both of the pubs.
Yep.
We still have Cooper's on tap here. With all of this that we do and what's going on, the last thing that I want to do, because essentially, like, I'm a publican. It's I've been doing it for 9-10 years now. Yeah. In the management side of things, I've been working hospitality since I left home.
Mm.
And the last thing you want to do when someone walks into your pub is to alienate them, tell them they're wrong. I mean, even if you have a beer, locally made lager that tastes just like Carlton, they want fucking Carlton.
Yeah, that's it.
And, you know, we don't have every single product that they might want. We don't have Pure Blonde or Crown Lager or anything, but we've got Carlton on tap and we've got Corona in the fridge because that makes people happy.
It covers a few bases.
Yeah, that's it. And you don't want to tell people they're wrong for...
Oh, that's it. Especially if you've got a group, like, they're out for dinner or going to come out for a party or whatever, and you might have like 8 out of 10 people that absolutely all over craft beers, and you've got two guys or girls, that don't know a lot about it.
Yeah.
You got to cater for them as well. You got to make them feel like they're part of it and that they're welcome here, and you don't want it to be too over. I mean, I've been places where, from a food point of view, you go somewhere and you just look at the menu and go, oh, fuck, I don't even understand half the things on the menu, let alone like whether I like them or not. And then you sort of look at a few things and they seem a little bit more simplistic in description. You go, oh, yeah, I think I'll like that. And so you it's that catering for all people. And that, yeah. I mean, that's business 101.
Well, it is, especially in this particular industry, it's not like, you don't want to be like catering to lowest common denominator, but you want to be able to, like you say, when you've got a big group of people, have something for those people that aren't super adventurous. I mean, we have a Palmer on it. Both pubs would never take it off. It's our biggest seller. We do simple, burgers and steaks and just good pub nice. Food. But yeah. then we have stuff that's a little bit more interesting. We do slightly more, I guess, restaurant style food as well to for those people who want something a little bit more exciting or interesting.
Add to the experience, I guess.
Yeah,
cool. Well, I'm looking at the time, I'm keeping an eye on it, but I'm going to ask you a couple of stock standard questions before we wrap up. Yeah,
sweet, man.
So we've got to touch on The Eternal really quickly. When the hell's the next album coming out?
Soon. it's in the process of being mixed at the moment.
Yeah, cool.
Mark and Richie, Richie?
Yeah.
So Richie who joined
the ranks?
Yeah, nice. Who's an absolute legend. Yeah. And he is also incredibly talented on the recording and mixing and production side of things. So him and Mark are just like bouncing off each other like crazy. So they're in the mixing process at the moment. So I can't give you an exact timeline because
I won't hold you to it.
Well, the first song took weeks to do because it was a 20-minute song.
Yeah,
like we've pretty much taken. With this album, we just kind of realized that we're not writing. No one's writing music for the radio anymore. Well, some people are. But but we're not
for the most part now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's just do a 20-minute epic doom song.
If it makes sense for you guys, then why not?
Exactly.
But are you? Because I remember talking to Mark. Jeez, I don't even know when the hell I talked to him for this podcast, but it was a long time ago now. And I think he was sort of in the earlier stages of putting it all together. And he was talking about how you guys sort of went off on you went off on a path where it was a lot more sort of lighter ambient sort of stuff. And now going back, not completely, but to more of a heavier doomy sort of sound. Is that where it still is now? Or are you going towards
it's much, it? It's much heavier now. The latest album's a lot heavier than the last one, which was a lot heavier than the one before that. We kind of had this I think we needed to get it out of our system. We kind of had a bit of a foray into just classic rock for
it was very sort of 70s.
I mean, that's when we all love 70s rock, big big drums, big John Bonham
big
drums
British
and,
sort
and
of
and big guitar solos and stuff like that. We love that shit, but now we're going back to what I guess where the band started, which was essentially melodic doom metal. There is still there's still a real melodic element to it, but it's heaps heavier, lots more big syncopated riffs. We've got I got a 5-string bass for it, so we're going down to B
nice
for it, so it's nice, low, heavy.
Yeah, cool.
And we've got, obviously, we're collaborating with Martin, who was on the used to be an Alternative Four. He was Cradle of Filth, My Dying Bride. So he's an incredible musician. Collaborating with some I think we had a violin player doing some stuff. We've got obviously Richie having a much bigger role. So it's a real collaboration, and it's a real dark, doomy, awesome sounding album. I can't wait to do it. We've also got a Ice House cover on there as well, which
I may or may not have heard an early demo of that quite some time ago, but
which I'm so stoked about because Ice House are one of my all-time favorite Australian bands. They're so good.
My first reaction was to Mark was you can't, because that was a song that I was trying to pitch the rest of the guys in our band to cover, which wouldn't have worked for us. It was just not the style, and this song totally fits in to what you guys do.
It's perfect.
It is so good.
Brooding, slow, you know. Just
really sort of moody, moody song. Anyway, we're going to leave that at that. But it is cool from what I heard from a while back.
So we'll have that. I mean, it'll be out soon.
Relatively soon. All right, cool. Well, pending.
Yeah.
Pending release, but that's cool. But thanks for having me. Thanks for having giving me a beer and really extremely tasty drop. More. Oh, yes. And, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, man. It's awesome. It's been fun.
Mad. Cool.
Thanks, everyone. AndySocial.net is the place to find everything we spoke about in this episode, or if you want to reach out to Dave as well, his details will be there. As per all of the guests that I've had on the podcast to date, you can go over to AndySocial.net, try and keep them in the one spot, make it nice and easy for you guys. Now, I'm going to wrap this up. This is going to be a very short outro. Rate and review on iTunes. Share these links around. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back next week with another episode, and until then, take care and ta-ta. You're a dead